From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Military veterans, first in line on the battlefront, but not lately when they come home from war. Wait times for benefits for vets returning from Iraq and Afghanistan have stretched out to shocking lengths. 642 days on average in New York, over 600 in L.A., 500 plus in Chicago, and high all over for war veterans with immediate problems. It's a scandal for the VA and the Obama administration and the country. This hour on Point, veterans backlogged and the price of war delayed and denied. You can join the conversation. Is this you, home from war and backlogged? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from San Francisco is Aaron Glantz, reporter at the Center for Investigative Reporting. They've uncovered the numbers, broke the story on the VA backlog that has exploded into scandal. Aaron Glantz, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's good to be with you.
Boy, have you raised a hullabaloo. Why didn't we know these numbers all along?
Well, the numbers that you were mentioning, over 600 days for a veteran filing their first claim in New York City, over 600 days for a veteran filing a disability claim for something as serious as post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injury, a thrown back, whatever. These numbers were leaked to us by a VA employee who thought that it was important that the public know that this was true. The VA has never disclosed this information to members of Congress or to the media. Instead, they've cherry-picked other information to share with us, which is also technically true, but ultimately misleading.
I mean, isn't that a scandal in itself that we don't know how our veterans are being treated, that's leaving individual veterans to feel like they're up against this cliff and the whole country doesn't know about it? Even Congress, the oversight people, don't know about it?
Well, I mean, this is a big problem, and Congress has become increasingly frustrated with the VA's unwillingness to share what they consider to be basic information. After I broke this story and I was asking the House Veterans Affairs Committee about, this data that we uncovered from the VA, they told me that they have 72 different outstanding requests for information from the VA, some of which go back more than a year, that the VA is just simply sitting on and refusing to share with the body, in our checks and balances of government that is supposed to be making sure that they do a good job.
We will talk later in this hour with Jeff Miller. He's the chair of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. He is calling for the resignation of the Undersecretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Allison Hickey. He'll be with us a little later in this hour. Aaron, what's happening here? What has happened? Why has this wait time exploded for vets?
Well, the VA will point out that they have a flood of veterans coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan, and that they have also granted new benefits to Vietnam veterans who were poisoned with Agent Orange and are now suffering from leukemia and other diseases that the VA has now recognized were caused by exposure to this toxic defoliant. But that doesn't fully explain the delays. You know, there's a 50% increase in new claims coming in because of the reasons I mentioned. But under President Obama, there is a 2,000% increase in the number of veterans waiting more than a year for their benefits. So one of the things that the documents that we got show is that when President Obama came in, and of course at that point we had already been at war for 7 years in Afghanistan and 5 years in Iraq, when he came in, there were 10,000 veterans waiting more than a year for their benefits. That number is now almost 250,000, according to these documents. And that is just extremely troubling, and it indicates that the various efforts that Obama has put forward and his administration to deal with veterans coming home, make sure they get their benefits, they have not worked.
The president was very outspoken about this. In the past, he said you've got a broken VA bureaucracy. What's going on? Is this because, too many have died, but still, as a percentage, fewer are dying in the field. We've got better battlefield medicine, so people are coming home with more problems. Have we simply identified more problems? Is a higher percentage of vets applying for disability benefits and other kinds of health benefits? What's the underlying scene here, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, I think that all of those things that you mentioned are factors. There are more people getting hurt and surviving in this war than before. A lot of the young men and women who are filing disability claims in Vietnam, they might have been dead. And now, thankfully, they're here, they're back home, and they're asking for help, and we're not able to get it to them in a timely way. The problem is one of bureaucratic collapse under President Obama. So, as you mentioned, when he ran for president, he said that the system was broken and he promised to fix it. Congress appropriated a substantial amount of money so the VA could staff up and handle this influx of claims that we're talking about. The Obama administration also talked about taking these claims off of paper. You know, if you go into the VA office in Boston or Oakland or Los Angeles, you will see quite literally piles and piles and piles of paperwork from these veterans. An individual veteran's claim file could be more than a foot or two tall.
Times all these veterans, 600,000 backlog, 900,000 waiting. I mean, I've seen the pictures. It looks like Citizen Kane. You write about some VA building in North Carolina where the weight of the applications became a structural threat to the building.
Yeah, and that's according to the VA's own inspector general. So they couldn't open the file drawers at that building in North Carolina. That was another problem. Not only were there so many file folders that it was impugning the structural integrity of the building, but also if you're a veteran in North Carolina, how are they supposed to find your file, you know, if you come up later and say, oh, you know, I've developed a new disease, or I had a child, so I deserve additional compensation,
or if you're just waiting,
something like that.
I mean, you remind us, you've got people here who may have traumatic brain injury, you name it. They file, they go through all this paperwork, and then they simply lose their file. They can't find it when they need it, and then they have to do all the paperwork over again. It's an outrage when you read it. Aaron Glantz, please stand by in San Francisco. I want to bring Tom Tarantino in right here. Joins us from New York, Chief of Policy for the Iraq and Afghan Veterans of America. He was a former Army captain himself. Tom Tarantino, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
You were in Washington last week saying this has to end. What was your message to Congress?
Yeah, I mean, just bottom line, we have to end the backlog. You know, I run the D.C. office here for IAVA, and I've been dealing with this issue for the last 5 years. Some of my friends in the veterans community have been dealing with it for the last 40. Bottom line, the backlog is too high. And I have been hearing for 5 years that the VA is going to fix it, that they're on top of it, that they've got this. Well, you know what? It's clear, especially after the numbers that Aaron put out, that they don't got this, that this is a serious problem. And I think this is a problem that it's not just about the VA. This is a problem that no one has a handle on. I don't think the VA has a good handle on where their problem is. And it's not just about them. It's also about the Department of Defense. It's about making sure that defense records get to the VA, not just in a readable format, but in an electronic format and something that the VA can use. 60% of defense health records are still on paper. So we're never going to fix this problem unless we get leadership at the highest levels of government grabbing both of these agencies and saying, look, you have to get your act together. We've been hearing a lot of talk from the White House, from the VA, from the DOD for the last 4 or 5 years. And I'm starting to feel like Charlie Brown with the football.
Yeah.
Every time they say they've got it, something else comes out that shows that they are totally way behind on this. And so we need the President of the United States to step up and lead. That's why IAVA was in D.C. last week to call for a presidential commission to end the backlog.
Tom,
we need to get the...
Make it real for us. I mean, for veterans who are waiting, what kind of problems have you seen that they're up against and they're waiting for help with? Like what?
Right. So we, you know, we had a veteran last week who's been waiting over 1,000 days. And he's been waiting 1,000 days for his claim. And he's been waiting that long because the VA lost his paperwork.
Yeah, but is it a big deal or is it a hangnail? I mean, what kind of claim?
No, I mean, this is he has a you know, partially paralyzed left hand.
Okay.
That was caused by a botched surgery. And the VA lost his paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
And then all he needed was the VA to send him a letter to tell him where to send it. And he waited a year and heard nothing. He went to the VA and talked to the highest levels of VA leadership. The next day they fixed his claim, which is awesome, but it also shows how tragically screwed up the system is. I mean, I shouldn't have to be taking veterans into VA headquarters who are waiting 1,000 days and have it get fixed the next day.
General Shinseki, who's in charge of the VA, saying over the weekend on the talk shows, you know, we'll have this all fixed up by 2015. Are you confident of that, Tom?
You know, I have been hearing the same story for years. You know, the VA is doing a lot. They are developing a digital claims process. Even though 97% of the claims are still on paper, they've been developing this computerized way to file claims for the last 5 years. Now, granted, every time they put out a release date for this piece of software, it keeps getting pushed back. So now we're looking at the end of the year. But what they're doing, A, clearly isn't working. B, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, I think Aaron pointed out in terms of, you know, the problems that they are identifying with claims and their solutions don't really match. And all we're seeing is the number getting bigger and bigger. And if I'm a veteran out there, you know, if I'm a veteran and I need to seek care with the VA, and I'm seeing my friends wait 600 days, that's a barrier to seeking care. And the VA actually has very good health care, and people should seek it out if they need it. But it's incredibly discouraging when you're looking around and you see 600,000 lives are being put on hold because the VA can't get its act together.
Do vets feel like they don't want to take care of them?
You know, I think veterans feel like, you know, the VA just isn't capable of doing its job right now. And, you know, I don't think there are any bad people at the VA. I don't think anybody at the VA wakes up and thinks, how am I going to mess with a vet today?
Sure.
That's not happening. You have really smart people of integrity, but what's happening is that they aren't talking to each other. It's not that I think that Secretary Shinseki is failing. I don't think he knows how bad the problem is.
Tom Tarantino is Chief of Policy with Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Tom, thanks very much for joining us for a minute today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about veterans back from war and waiting way too long for benefits, a near system collapse at the VA, and the price of war delayed and denied here. Aaron Glantz is with us, reporter for the Center for Investigative Reporting. It was leaked numbers, leaked documents that came to him out of the VA that made clear really for the first time just how long these waits are. 273 days for those in the backlog, and in many cities around the country, much higher. 642 days in New York, 619 in LA, 500 plus in Chicago. If you've got a real problem, that's a long time. Let's go to Donnie in Charlotte, North Carolina. Donnie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I just wanted to say I got out in 2011, and I had a list, probably 15 disabilities that I'd gotten while I was airborne, jumping out of planes, bad knees, bad back, PTSD. And what happened to me is whenever I sent that in, within 90 days, I got a reply saying that we're going to give you 10% and everything else is going to be disqualified. We're not going to give you money for it. Which in turn, I had to end up going to a lawyer, and now I'm working 2 years out of that, still waiting on an answer.
Donnie, let me ask you, they wanted to give you 10%. Does that mean they were saying to you, you're claiming too much here, it's not as bad as you're saying, Donnie, you know, goodbye and good luck? Were you inflating your claims or something? Is that what that response means?
No, they only they gave me the 10% for something that they had medical record of while I was in service, which brings me to another point that while I was in, it's very hard for you to get good medical records that the VA needs to base all their opinions off of when you've got officers and other high-ranking NCOs telling you, you don't need to see medical attention, don't worry about this, you'll be all right. And then 2-3 years down the line, you're like, wow, that's really starting to mess with me, but I don't have any paperwork for that.
Right, right. Donnie, we're going to pick that up, and I appreciate your call very much out of Charlotte. Let me get one more here from Omaha. John, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. A follow-up to your guest comments about how screwed up the VA is. You know, not only is it not set up, I think, to handle the great influx of soldiers who need medical help these days as compared to years past, but their bookkeeping seems to be a mess. My wife works for a private contractor in Omaha handling medical claims for the VA.
Okay.
And some of those claims are 2 and 3 years old, so they can't even get paid in a timely fashion.
Is the VA following up on that? Are they coming to your wife's company and saying, come on, hurry up here, or what?
They're pushing them, and, you know, I don't know if this is a matter of course that the VA hires private contractors to do this or that they've got such a backlog that they can't handle it, they need help, but... yeah, some of these claims are 2 and 3 years old, and that just seems quite long. My wife says sometimes they can't even get paid on claims because they're too old, and the insurance companies aren't paying them, and the VA isn't following up.
John in Omaha, whose wife is right in the middle of it as a contractor, I guess, for the VA. Aaron Glantz, in these first two calls, what do you hear?
Well, the first caller who served in these wars, who has this medical records problem, that's very common. And that's one of the issues that the VA is dealing with, is that when you're in, Fallujah or Najaf or Kandahar and you get blown up, the last thing that your commanding officer wants you to do is, pull off to the side of the road and fill out a bunch of forms.
Right.
But that is exactly what the VA is going to be looking for when you come home and you file a claim. It's a problem. It's one of the problems that Tom Tarantino was talking about that is out of the VA's control. But there's plenty of things that are in the VA's control, like this computer system. They've spent they know that they need to get all of this off paper. They spent $500 million on a computer system, and it does not work yet.
Why?
It's a lot of good questions. We're now looking into that. But I think that there has not been a lot of attention into the why by the VA itself. When you have Secretary Shinseki, trotting himself out to the media and saying that we're still going to get there by 2015 and everything is A-OK, there isn't that kind of transparency and honesty from the agency that says the computer system hasn't worked yet because of this reason, and so now we're going to change what we're doing slightly to make it work. We're not hearing that. And on the staffing issue, we keep hearing again and again, they are slammed. There are too many people coming home filing claims for them to handle it properly. President Obama recognized this was a problem when he was running for president. And after he was elected, the VA got money to hire 3,000 more claims processors.
Yeah.
But in the internal documents that we obtained, they've only been able to hire a net of 300. So they can't keep people.
Why?
Because the system is so dysfunctional. Who wants to work there if you're going to be dealing with mounds and mounds of paperwork on files and people are always calling you and they're angry and the computer system doesn't work? You're going to leave, right? If you're high quality, you can go find a private health insurer or a private workers' comp company, to go work in. You don't need this grief. You want to help vets, but if the system is dysfunctional, you're going to get out. Then this turnover, it compounds the problem, because then you have a lot of new people coming in who maybe aren't even veterans or don't know the military, don't know any of this, but they're the people who are willing to work in this broken system, and they are dealing with this problem. They're completely overmatched.
Aaron, stand by in San Francisco at the Center for Investigative Reporting. With me right now in the studio is Linda Bilmes. She's a professor of public policy at Harvard University, studies U.S. budgets, specifically the costs of war, veterans affairs, and the civil service. Linda Bilmes, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you.
What is going on here?
Well, I think the problem is that the system is fundamentally broken. And what we've seen at the VA over the past 4 years is that despite having strong leadership, despite having a commitment to this problem, despite hiring a number of new processors and investing substantially in the IT systems, the system is still fundamentally broken.
How can you have strong leadership and tolerate a fundamentally broken system?
Well,
when you say strong leadership, it doesn't feel that way.
I think they have done everything humanly possible to make the current system work, which means hiring people, training people, investing in IT. And so my conclusion, which I had reached before, but I am even more certain of it now, is that we need a different system.
Well, leadership is more than investing in a bad system, right?
Well,
real leadership.
I think that in fairness to the VA, the VA has made it possible for everyone coming home to have 5 years of free medical care. And the problem has been on the disability benefit side, where we are still using a intensely bureaucratic, paperwork-intensive system where the amount of documentation required for each returning veteran is vast. And what we should be doing is something closer to the system that the IRS uses for taxes, where they don't audit every single taxpayer.
Just tell us your disabilities. We'll give you the bennies, and we'll audit here and randomly to see. I want to come back to that. What about the vets themselves? Are they different? Are they coming home with different or somehow more issues that make this more challenging, Linda?
Absolutely. The veterans' claims are much more complex than in previous wars.
Why?
This is the first big test of the all-volunteer force. The veterans are coming back. Typically, they've served for long periods of time, often in very grueling conditions,
three, four, five tours.
And the veterans coming back with multiple conditions. For example, we have 253,000 who have been diagnosed with traumatic brain injury, and the majority of those are concurrent with PTSD. So just
concurrent meaning?
Concurrent meaning they have both post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury.
Because of IEDs, because of all this stuff in Iraq where the roadsides are blowing up around them? Don't all wars have explosions and problems?
Well, the IEDs have been, and the force level blast to which a large number of troops have been exposed has actually been a fairly new phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Every war has its own new phenomenon. But in work that I've done with UCSF Medical School in San Francisco, we've exposed rodents to the same force level blasts as some of our troops have been exposed to. And we've seen similar levels of traumatic brain injury with the neurological symptoms that often stem from that.
Aaron, why is there such disparity between different parts of the country? You look at, let's say, Little Rhode Island, and you say they're doing great in responding to claims. Look at New York City or Chicago or L.A. You've got these enormous wait times. Why? What's the disparity about?
Well, I mean, part of it, I think, is uneven management and uneven quality of staffing. You know, the Oakland office in Northern California, where I am, was one of the poorest performing in the country. We did a story about how there was a employee there who, you know, was arguing against wrongfully denying this Navy veterans benefits. This is a guy who had been homeless for 15 years after serving in Beirut in 1983 and then the Persian Gulf War. And they were saying he had never been in combat. And she was fired. The director who's overseeing this office is an absolute disaster. You know, and now there's been more congressional scrutiny because of the media attention. She's out. New management is in. New management makes a difference, right? And then as far as the workers, you know, if you're in New York City, yeah, where the average wait on a new claim is 642 days, and there's this paperwork disaster that I've been describing, there are plenty of good jobs that you can get in New York City that are less of a headache.
So you're out of there, and the paper sits in the warehouse.
Yeah. I mean, on the other hand, like you live in Omaha, Nebraska, you know, maybe this is one of the better federal jobs you can get. There's no high tech sector that you can just turn around and go bolt to like you could, you know, if you were in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Let's go to Caroline calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Caroline, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a United States Army veteran, and I'm a physician as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that the system is rigged to fail.
What do you mean?
I spent, I don't know how much time in my immediate post-military career trying to help veterans that would contact me personally, help them get their paperwork documented, signing affidavits. Personally, myself, I've never had my claim filed because I worked until the last day of my military service and never got a chance to finish my final physical exam. So I really don't have any proof of anything that happened to me.
So why do you think the system is not responding better to the veterans? Is it because of the bureaucratic mess that we're hearing about, or is it some kind of bias against, I mean,
It is the bureaucracy. There are probably 15 administrators for every provider. And let me tell you something. Some of those administrators are really good, but some of them are really bad.
Do you think vets are exaggerating their claims?
I think not. My father was a military veteran. He just died from complications of Agent Orange exposure, and he was never able to get anything documented. And he served 2 tours in Vietnam.
Caroline, I appreciate your call. I appreciate the help that you've given to vets trying to get through this system, and your service as well. Thank you for calling. I mean, Linda, there it is, a doctor and a vet, and she still can't get through it.
Well, it's almost mathematical. When you have a volume of claims that's coming in that is so complex and so vast, and you have a capacity of the system that just can't manage that volume, you have to think about going to a different kind of a system.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at private medical care like Blue Cross Blue Shield, they process 30 million claims a year, 98% of them within 30 days. Now, they accept that the perfect is the enemy of the good. They don't audit every single claim.
Even Blue Cross Blue Shield, they just accept some. They look for outliers, for things that don't
add
up.
That's right. Now, they audit. And this is not quite the same because we're talking about lifetime disability benefits.
Yeah.
We're talking about a system where there is no disincentive to filing repeated claims. But the main difference between a sort of Blue Cross Blue Shield type of a claim situation is that in this case, we're putting the full burden of filing the claim and putting together all the documentation on the veteran. I compare it to the graduate school application mm-hmm. process. And considering that we actually, for the new veterans, approve well over 95% of the claims mm-hmm. to some extent, mm-hmm. there's the
why make it so hard?
Why make it so hard? There's just too much documentation required.
I can imagine, I feel a little skeptical here. I can imagine a couple of things. Number one, they fear that if they just say, you know, give us your claim and except for, you know, we'll audit a few, but most of them will go right through. They fear a flood. And on the other hand, or maybe right alongside that, maybe we haven't really put aside the money to pay for all the after effects of these wars, Linda. Maybe we're just not ready to fill these claims.
Well, the long-term costs of war, of any war, occur decades later when the veterans become
which is starting
older.
Now. It's 10 years since the beginning of Iraq.
It's beginning now, but we know from World War I, for example, that the peak year for claims was in 1969.
From World War
I? From World War I. And in World War
II. World War
I? World War I, so 50 years after armistice.
Wow.
The peak year in World War II for disability claims, the peak year for paying out was in 1982. So we know that there will be very substantial long-term cost associated with these claims, with caring for the veterans of these wars and paying disability compensation.
We've been beating up on the Obama administration for the management of this problem right now, but did the Bush administration bake those costs into their public presentation of what Iraq was going to cost when it spoke to the public, what Afghanistan was going to cost?
Well, we did. We underpriced the war. I mean, we knew from the very beginning, and certainly when we were into it, that every time we appropriated a dollar for war, there would be another dollar that would be inevitably accruing for long-term care of the veterans who
fought. But we heard about $100 million, the sort of cakewalk scenario. So when you say we knew, who's we?
Well, I think that there were
it's
a number.
It's not what the government was telling us.
No, certainly the Bush administration at the beginning of the war thought it would be very short and quick and cheap. As we got further into the war, there are many discrepancies in how the war was paid for. But on the veterans side, we do not as a society put aside money at the time we go to war. I have recommended that we set up a veterans trust fund so that we actually appropriate money for caring for veterans at the same time, which would have the benefit of both making war more expensive.
So when you start a war, it would show up like a Social Security payment on your paycheck or something?
It would show up. Well, if you were a private company, you would mm-hmm. call it deferred compensation.
Mm-hmm.
We know that veterans will receive deferred compensation. But if I can raise mm-hmm. one more point here, one of the reasons we're seeing this pressure on the disability system is because of the way the military pension system is set up. Military pensions are set up so you get a generous pension if you retire after 20 years. But if you serve for only 19.9 years, you get nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the vast majority, 87% of the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans will not serve for 20 years. And so what you have, and some of the callers have reflected this, are young men and women who have served for a number of years. They've come back with injuries. They're not quite the same. And yet, unless they can get a stipend through the disability compensation system, they get nada.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about veterans back from war and waiting way too long for benefits. A near system collapse, people are saying at the VA, and the price of war may be delayed and maybe denied by this country when it comes to our vets. Aaron Glantz is with us, reporter for the Center for Investigative Reporting. They broke this story wide open with a leak out of the VA about just how big the numbers were. Even Congress didn't know. Hearings last week there, Democrats and Republicans saying, come on, Obama administration, get on top of this. Calls for some heads to roll there. Aaron joins us from San Francisco. Linda Bilmes is with me in the studio, professor of public policy at Harvard University, author of The $3 Trillion War, The True Cost of the Iraq Conflict with Joe Stiglitz. Let's go to Craig. He's calling from Aiken, South Carolina. Craig, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, Tom. I'm sort of sorry to say this, but I have had absolutely nothing but first-class service from the VA.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, honest to goodness. And I live in South Carolina, and I have to go over to the VA, and I had surgery a year or so ago. I came back in 2007.
Back from where, Craig?
From
Iraq, Afghanistan?
Iraq, mm-hmm. Yeah. My second tour. Mm-hmm. And I had some foot problems, and they checked it out, and we couldn't find it. And then we did. They suggested surgery. Everything was on computer. I went over there numerous times afterwards, post-surgery, having checkups. I had my foot in a cast for 8 weeks.
Yep.
Everything was on computer. I just walked in the door, and, you know, they asked my...
That sounds great. Was there any wait to get started, Craig, or no wait?
Well, you know, it was a normal paperwork shuffle, and but I always got service. I mean, you know, it might not be quite on my schedule, but once they found out what it was, I mean, it was great. And secondly, I'm positive that the VA, I mean, like when you walk in there, they are slammed. And it breaks your heart. You see, I mean, they are just wall-to-wall people. And you look at them, and they're young folks, older mm-hmm. guys, and you just really think about the cost of this war and what it did to lives. But anyway, I'm just going to tell you, the VA did an excellent job in Georgia.
Craig, you're a gentleman for acknowledging that, and I appreciate it. Aaron Glantz, what do you say to that? There's a very satisfied veteran of two tours in Iraq. It happened fast for him, fast enough by his measure. It was all computerized, first-class service. He saw them working hard to provide it. This doesn't sound like the picture that's being painted here, Aaron.
Well, you know, it's actually not inconsistent at all what we've been saying, because the VA is actually two separate systems. There's one, which is the healthcare system, which has been completely almost computerized in the medical records, where veterans get 5 years of all but free healthcare when they get out of the military, and where the VA has been doing, a reasonably good job in getting people in the door and treated and getting them health care that they need when they come home. Then there's this second bureaucracy, which is what we've been talking about for most of the show, which is the benefits bureaucracy. And that's what we're saying is completely broken. So there's a lot of veterans, actually. They come home, they're getting treatment for PTSD or for traumatic mm-hmm. brain injury from a roadside bomb blast from the VA. And then they turn around and they go to the benefits side and they say, listen, I can't work because my head was blown up in the war. I need a monthly check. I'm even getting treated down the street by your own hospital,
yep.
and they're forced to wait.
Let's go to Randy in Cordon, Indiana. Randy, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I would have to second that getting through the bureaucracy, ridiculous. I fought VA for more than 4 years getting through the bureaucracy on my percentage of disability just to have it raised from 60% to basically I'm 100% total. I knew someone about 10 years ago. He fought VA for like 18 years before he was able to get through the bureaucracy and get his benefit.
Randy, maybe they didn't believe that you were 100% disabled. Did they have an argument or not?
Made me this 100% is what is referred to as individual unemployability.
Mm-hmm.
I was hit with a car doing a minimum 55 to 60. I was walking, trying to get myself and two of my friends out of the way.
Yep.
We were not on the pavement. The other gent that I was referring to, my understanding is fought him like 18 years, I'm sorry. Vietnam vet. And took blast, you know, from RPG.
And waiting a long, long time. Randy, I appreciate your call, and I wish you good luck with that. With us right now from Pensacola, Florida, Congressman Jeff Miller, Republican representative from Florida's District 1. Vets make up 20% of the population in his district in Pensacola and beyond. He's chairman of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, which grilled the VA last week on the benefits backlog. Congressman Miller, thank you very much for being with us.
Tom, it's my pleasure.
What's the heart of the problem here, Congressman?
If I knew the answer to that, I think we could solve it very quickly. I'm beginning to think that it is more a culture within the VA as to satisfying for less than the very best, which, of course, is not at all what we would expect an agency that's charged with taking care of our veterans.
There's been $500 million put up here to try to make this better. You would think that even if there was a cultural problem, that would produce some kind of outcome.
You would think so, but I will tell you this. The you know, VA will quickly tell you that it's not an issue where they have asked for more people or more money because Congress has consistently given more and more and more. Now the secretary is out there touting VBMS, which is the Veteran Benefit Management system that is the electronic. They're all doing paper shuffling right now, and they're saying going to electronics is going to be the solution. I'm not totally convinced. I think it's a tool in the system, but I will tell you this. The employees, the 300,000 employees at VA right now, by and large, are excellent workers that are doing great work for the veterans, but there is a culture of some that they're entitled to a job no matter how good or bad they do that job, and I think the VA needs to be a little more attuned to getting rid of those that are just dead weight.
Congressman Aaron Glantz is here, who broke this story. I'm sure you've seen his work with the Center for Investigative Reporting. Linda Bilmes is with us as well from Harvard, and she says, and I'd like to get your response to this, that the VA on this front should run more like Blue Cross Blue Shield or more like the IRS. That is, get the claims, just sort of push most of them through and do random audits more or less to see if people are trying to work or cheat the system. And that way you could push a big volume through in a hurry and not have our veterans waiting so long. What do you think about that approach?
That approach has been talked about. My former ranking member and the former chairman of the committee, Bob Filner, had talked about that for a long time. I don't know if that is going to be the way that's going to solve the problem. Sure, it's a great way to move a lot of cases through very quickly. I don't mind looking at the opportunity again, but I don't think that's going to solve ultimately what needs to be done. And it would be very similar to the IRS, where they take most returns, approve them, and then they go back on a periodic basis and do audit them.
I can't help wondering if part of the problem here is that maybe we didn't have or set aside the money to really pay for this. Maybe we don't have it now, and there's a kind of just a system drag here because, you know, acknowledging the full cost of these wars, what it's going to be over the decades to come, is pretty daunting given our finances.
The price of war is a whole lot more than just the hardware that's being used, and certainly the cost of the active duty person. It is also the long-term care, the mental health care, the disability payments that are made to the warfighter. Those that have served in uniform for this country. And, you know, I will tell you this, that no matter where you go in the United States of America, the vast majority of people will say, we need to pay whatever it takes to take care of the veterans because they were willing, in many cases, to stand up and volunteer, as we have now, all-volunteer military, and pay that cost of war, of which taking care of our veterans is part of.
You've called for the resignation of VA Undersecretary Allison Hickey. Any movement on that front?
I talked to the secretary after I said that. Of course, secretary is saying that she's the right person for the job, and he is the boss at VA, but I'm also saying she is not the right person for the job. I think she is in over her head, and that is not at all to say that she is not a good person and had a wonderful service in the United States military. But I think this takes somebody who is better able to handle what's out there today. What really discourages me is that in the hearing last week, I recited from, I think it was a 1995 budget submission by the White House, basically using the exact same excuses today that they used in 95. The claims were more complex. We are having a drawdown, more people entering into the system. We cannot keep using the same excuse over and over again. If I hear the secretary say one more time that the Agent Orange claims, the Niemers cases, were the result of the backlog, it makes you want to scream, because he's the one that actually, with a stroke of a pen, said there were some presumptive illnesses that we would take, and it was the right thing to do, but they did not do anything to prepare for the flood of cases that were going to come into the system.
Congressman Jeff Miller, Republican, Florida's 1st District, representing there out of Pensacola today. Congressman, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my honor, Tom. Look forward to talking with you again.
Good to have you. Aaron Glantz, look at these two administrations, the Bush administration, the Obama administration, and how they each handled, I mean, the war and the fallout here. How should sort of responsibility for this mess be apportioned here?
Well, President Bush, of course, we were attacked on 9/11, and then we attacked Iraq in 2003, and that was a war of choice. And at the time, as Linda Bilmes was saying, we were led to believe as a country that these would be short wars and over quickly. And Donald Rumsfeld said that he wasn't sure if the war would go on for 3 weeks or 3 months. And we just celebrated, you know, 10 years in Iraq almost, and we're still in Afghanistan. And, you know, one of Dick Cheney's aides said it would be a cakewalk, and we're all familiar with this. So there was also, at the same time, a real deception around the human costs and an unwillingness to staff up at the VA and prepare. And that was under Bush. And so under President Bush, we saw these problems fester. But it's interesting that we didn't really see the backlog explode until President Obama came in. You know, if you
why
look
did that
at
happen?
Number, I think it's difficult to say. I mean, I think a lot of it must be, you know, a management issue under President Obama, and some of the people in charge must not be doing, you know, the right thing, because there's no. I mean, the congressman is right. You know, President Obama came in and Congress apportioned more money and arranged for them to hire more people. But the money for the electronic transfer has not been effective. And the people, the actual bodies, are not on the ground working, even though the money is available. So I think that you have a real inability to execute the plan under President Obama.
Linda Bilmes, how do you look at what happened under the Bush administration here and then the Obama? Why the explosion under the Obama administration of the backlog?
Well, I think that you know, this is a process issue, and the explosion has simply been a result of the volume of claims that have come in as you have more people who are leaving the war.
Cycling out of those wars.
You know, cycling out. We had up to now 783,623 veterans who have applied for disability compensation.
Out of Iraq and Afghanistan?
Out of Iraq and Afghanistan, yes. I mean, the overall numbers, there have been 2.5 million who have been deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. 1.56 million have to date been discharged into the veteran system.
As a percentage of those who served applying for disability, is this typical of other wars or higher?
Well, this is much higher. I mean, this is 56% of those who are eligible now have already applied for disability compensation. And this is much higher than the estimates that Joe Stiglitz and I had expected.
Is it a credible number to you, even with all the complexity that you described earlier? Is there exploitation going on here? I hate to say that, but you just...
I mean, absolutely not. That's the amazing thing. I mean, of those 783,623,000 Iraq and Afghanistan veterans who have applied, only 15,000 have been denied.
Wow.
So
they're looking and they're seeing, yeah, we got problems here.
Right. 671,299 have been approved, which is why I think when you have a system that 98% are being approved, you have to conclude that it is a system that basically should be a simple system to approve them, because almost all of them end up being approved.
Well, it's galling when they're not. You heard the congressman's kind of tone of resistance to that idea, the IRS approach.
But I think, you know, the VA has processed in the past 4 years. The VA has set up the system for the new GI Bill and has processed pretty effectively millions of new GI education claims. The VA has made the medical side of it provide free 5 years of free medical care for all returning veterans mm-hmm. because they realized that the previous system, which was to try and determine whether the medical problem was related to service, was too difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we need is symmetry. So there's a 5-year grace period in which whatever comes in for a new veteran is approved on the basis of an exit medical interview.
And the next time we think about going to war and calculate the cost over the better part of a century for that war?
The next time, hopefully not too soon, the next time we go to war, we should be appropriating in a Veterans Trust Fund at least 25% in excess on every dollar that we appropriate to put aside for paying for veterans over the long term.
Seriously, bear in mind the full cost of war and then take care of the veterans when they have come home, as so many have from Iraq and Afghanistan. Linda Bilmes, it's always good to see you, co-author of The $3 Trillion War. Thank you for joining us today, Linda.
Thank you.
And Aaron Glantz, our gratitude and admiration to you for breaking this story, getting it all out there, even when Congress didn't have it, at the Center for Investigative Reporting in San Francisco. Aaron, thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Tomorrow in this hour, we look at this epic week in the Supreme Court on gay marriage, the arguments there and the history, the outlook for the court's decision. Join us for that. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.